Now, In Depth with Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening on Tuesday, June 24th, 2014. Welcome to the program 408 on In Depth with Francis Rose. Our producers, Sean McCauley and Nicole Agrisco. Internet editors Michael O'Connell and Jack Moore. In this hour of the program, the seal of approval for five companies to be the NSA's cyber emergency responders. You'll learn about it at 4:35. And at 4:50, more sequestration is starting to look pretty bad for the Internal Revenue Service. That all coming this hour on In Depth with Francis Rose. First, though, training your agency's employees by sitting them down in a classroom in front of a teacher giving a lecture won't work for the federal government anymore. Mike Casey's the Chief Learning Officer at the General Services Administration, my guest in the executive suite today. He is at the forefront of the effort to teach agency managers the difference between training and learning. And Mike, I appreciate having you on. You and I talked about this as part of a panel discussion at the Excellence in Government Conference, and I'm happy we have a chance to continue this conversation. That essence of the difference between learning and training is really what you are trying to deal with right now and trying to educate your colleagues at GSA about, isn't it, Mike?
Francis, it's a pleasure to be with you today, and every opportunity we have to engage on this topic, we jump on it. And I'm speaking for every chief learning officer that's out there, I think. Training is important, and we still need to do it right, but training is not the end. It's a means to an end. Learning is halfway home for us. So our job as a chief learning officer is to shift the dialogue from training to what people are learning to the most important thing, which is, are they performing better in the workplace? And so it's the role of the chief learning officer to facilitate that cultural change as we move the dialogue again with everybody inside our agency from talking about training to talking about learning to ultimately talking about performance.
The reason that I thought that this was so impactful when we had this conversation at the conference, Mike, is because this is the difference between outputs and outcomes. And that's so critical in government now with budgets going the way they're going, that the fact that you or some other CLO at some other agency had X number of people complete whatever fill-in-the-blank training doesn't matter anymore. What you just said is really the crux of what's important, and that is the workforce performing better in the workplace. Has that cultural shift been difficult, both in GSA and from what you hear from your colleagues across government?
Oh, there's no question. This is the elephant in the room, if you will, and we're all struggling with it. This is a big change in mindset. It's a paradigm shift, and we all inside our training and development organizations, we have to work our way through it and make sure that the folks who do training and development understand where we're going and why that old paradigm doesn't work. And then we have to communicate it to everybody in the C-suite and to our executives across the agency, so that they understand and they can recalibrate their expectations for us and for training and for who owns this. And then, of course, we need to be working with all of our employees, the entire workforce, starting with onboarding. When they walk in the door, regardless of what they think they know about training, we have to start developing the culture right then and there in order to change that mindset. It's going to take a while.
You use the term recalibrating expectations. That's a pretty cool term, because that doesn't just imply you're going to change somebody's mind. It implies that you're going to, it sounds like a re-education or a learning process in and of itself. I would think you're the appropriate guy for that job. But tell me about that process where you're taking somebody's preconceived notions about what training looks like and saying, no, this isn't how we do it anymore, and here are the reasons why we don't do it that way anymore, and here are the reasons why we've moved in this direction.
Sure. You know, in a big agency, our the other executives out there are going to be all over the spectrum, from really savvy, very sophisticated, they get it. They've been tracking what's going on in training and learning and performance. They understand, and we have to race to keep up with them. But we also have others that, you know, this is really something new for them, and we have to develop an individual relationship with each one of those leaders, figure out where they are on that spectrum, and then tailor the way that we educate and facilitate that discussion so that they get it. We have to be, it's a win-win thing when we do it right, but we have to explain it in a way that they understand what's in it for them, what the value added is by looking at training and learning and development through a different lens, a lens that perhaps they didn't have before or earlier in their career.
You mentioned onboarding, and it strikes me that given what we know and what we're learning about the way that the younger people that every agency seems to be putting a premium on right now, Mike, the idea of coming into a job where they're going to be learning sounds tremendously appealing. The idea of coming into a job where they're going to go through a lot of training probably isn't. And I understand this isn't a semantics-only difference, but that presentation difference to the new, the potential employee, when that onboarding process starts, has the potential, it seems to me, to make the onboarding process either very exciting or make somebody roll their eyes and go, why did I ever take this job?
Oh, sure. And of course, we want it to be exciting, but not just because we want them to be jazzed, but we want them to really understand what we mean. I mean, it's a buzzword to say lifelong learning. But if we can inculcate values like that in new employees from when they walk in the door for onboarding, if they own their own training and learning and development, then we become enablers, we're facilitators, but we get away from this idea that training is an HR responsibility. Any place where we think that the training is owned by HR, we've already lost. But if we can bring in new employees, we can develop new supervisors, and we can get the old dogs to be doing the new trick of understanding that they own this stuff and they own their own training and development, their own learning, then we're halfway home.
Is that responsibility shift part of the cultural thing that we talked about earlier, or is that maybe a little separate because of it being a responsibility issue and not just a way I look at the world issue?
Yeah, it's a little of both. Clearly everyone owns it. It's important. We spend a lot of our time in the CLO job, you're looking across the enterprise. And so you have to be looking out for the agency as a whole, and that responsibility is not something that you can delegate to someone else. But transferring the idea that down there on the deck plate level, at the local level, whether you're dealing with a career series, something that those folks and those supervisors, they own their own training, they're responsible for their own learning, they understand how it all feeds into better performance. If we can get that across and they feel that sense of ownership, then it makes everybody's job a whole lot easier.
Mike Casey's the Chief Learning Officer at the General Services Administration. Mike, when you talk about looking across the enterprise from your position, that's the horizontal view. Are we seeing a shift in the way that the vertical view looks for the individual employee, where it used to be the learning ladder, the way that I understood it was when you get to this job, when you get to this grade, you expect to go through this and so on and so forth. Does that look different now? And is there more of a learning career for an employee to kind of fit with that lifelong learning concept?
You know, I'm sure that's the direction we're going, Francis. We're not there yet, but we're working toward that. I heard somebody use the phrase not that long ago. We're trying to create or grow a self-weeding garden. We want to put career paths. We want to put training opportunities. We want to put assessment strategies. We want to put all sorts of stuff out there so that the individual employees can find what they need when they need it, and they're going to develop their own networks. And so, yes, it's true that we're looking horizontally when we're at the enterprise level, but we have to be able to do that because that's one of the ways we break down those vertical stovepipes. So at a minimum, by looking at it from the enterprise level, we're looking at it from a different angle and we're going to see different things. But the federal workplace of the future, and I don't know when this is, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, at some point, all of those solid and dotted lines are going to go away as far as the individual is concerned. They're going to get their training the same way they get their LinkedIn now or their Facebook or something like that. It's out there. Nobody has to maintain all those networks and those channels. You develop develop it, you put it out there in a way that people can find what they need when they need it, and then they'll map their own ways to their own way to get to the stuff that they need to be better at their job.
But it strikes me, Mike, that if you're taking on more of a role of a facilitator rather than a provider, and if the people who need the learning, and if the people who need their people to get that learning are owning it, then that sounds like it fits right in the pocket with what your role will be moving forward.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not gaffing off the idea of providing. We still have to do that, and we have to do it right. But, you know, one of the things that's changing in the delivery of training is that there's so much going on with the neurosciences now that we know so much more about how people learn and how to deliver that training so that they learn it, and when they walk out of that room, they've got something that they can take back to the workplace and use. And so they don't have to be sipping from a fire hose. We're giving them what they need, when they need it, in a way that facilitates their learning of it, and we build into the training that we do deliver the things that make it much more likely that on Monday morning, when they've been out all week going to training, they come in on Monday morning, and the first thing they do is unpack their briefcase, and they start to apply the stuff that we taught them the week before, because they actually learned it.
We talk about the real desired outcome of learning, which is that the employee is able to open that briefcase when he or she goes back to the office on Monday and apply the information, apply the knowledge gained immediately. Is that something that is or is becoming measurable, or has the ability to measure that and demonstrate a return on investment of learning dollars, is it still a little elusive?
Well, it isn't easy. If it was easy, anybody could do it, and we're not quite there yet, Francis. But it's becoming more measurable as we better understand what it is we're trying to measure. And again, before, in the past, we would have been measuring training. How many classroom hours, how many people graduated from a class, how much money we spent to deliver this program or that program. It's really easy with return on investment to think that the only numbers that count or the only things that count are numbers like that. And this is where we find ourselves back around talking about expectations again. When we develop new training, we always want to build into it the ability to measure it. But we have to start by making sure we're asking the right question. Why are they there? So it's less a question of what we're teaching them, but we're asking, again, maybe it's that why question. So if, for example, in a leadership, executive leadership development program, we could make a full-time job out of calculating how much it costs to put a cohort of 25 people through a program, and next year then our return on investment could improve because it was $20,000 a person this time, and then it was $18,000, and then it was $16,000, and we will be kidding ourselves into thinking that we're doing better and our return on investment is improving. Whereas the question we really should be asking ourselves is, why are we putting people through an executive leadership development program? And maybe the answer to that is because we need 5 people a year to become new SESs inside our agency. Whoa, now we're starting to get to grips with what are the expectations. And if we need 5 people to get them ready for that, that's a whole different program and a whole different set of parameters that we're going to use to measure it. So by understanding what our expectations are from the program, we're in an infinitely better job or position to be able to measure whether or not we're getting there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it also fits because it sounds like that gives you the tools then that you need once you've established those kinds of parameters, Mike, to help people build the learning careers concept that we talked about earlier. If you want to achieve this in your career, these are the things you need to learn, the concepts you need to learn, not the classes you have to take, which is what we've determined already isn't the approach that either employees or organizations are taking in the 21st century.
That's absolutely the case, Francis.
So building then that learning career becomes, it seems to me, a lot easier for the employee and for the manager, and less important for some HR infrastructure to have to build when that kind of that list of desired skills, or that it's almost like you're establishing prerequisites in a learning environment rather than on a college where you have to have taken this before you can take that?
You know, it may be easier for HR, but only after you have all of those offerings there.
Right, and I'm not suggesting that's easy up front. That's a really difficult pull to start with. But it seems that the curve then goes down tremendously once you've gotten past that. Is that a reasonable thought?
It is, and let me give you one example of that. You know, you can think of what a traditional mentoring program looks like, and you have a program manager, and you have a website, and you have some, you know, people who apply for a mentor, and we have other people who express an interest in mentoring, and there's a fair amount of overhead that goes into that. But what's it going to look like in the future? Well, in the future, it's going to look like LinkedIn. In other words, all that information is going to be there, and for every employee, they know what kind of help they need from a mentor right now today, and they're going to get a recommendation the same way Amazon can recommend books to them. They're going to go ahead and log on in the morning, and it's going to say, hey, for this critical skill gap over here that you personally have identified, here are five people that you might want to contact for some just-in-time mentoring. Something like that is, to me, the wave of the future.
The future of this actually strikes me as being very exciting because it becomes less formal, it becomes less structured, and I don't want to necessarily imply that it's going to be ad hoc where you're just kind of chaotically walking around getting learning here and learning there.
Sure.
But it certainly will be as organized, it seems to me, as it is now. It just will be structured differently. And I wonder if that's scary for some folks, both the learners and the people who expect others to be learning.
It is a little bit, for sure. It's, you know, you sit down in front of your cable TV and you have 1,000 channels. You have to make a choice what you're going to watch. So there's a little bit of that, but on the other hand, we're doing this in so many other areas of our lives right now, and especially the younger generations have been doing it their entire adult lives. They're much more in tune to this than the old dogs are.
And that's where I wanted to go next is, as the informality takes hold on learning environments, does that make it more difficult to gauge the results that we talked about? When it becomes more casual and it becomes less structured, does that make it more difficult for you to make sure that you're getting the outcomes that you want and not just, well, 80 people watch this video, so that means 80 people have acquired this skill?
Sure. Yeah, we can't make those kinds of assumptions at all. So just like I was saying before, when we launch a new training program or a course, we have to build into it how we're going to measure it. The same thing is true here. But what's different is, like with the mentoring program, every 6 months we don't have to send a survey out to everybody who's in a mentor program and a smile sheet, you know, the Likert scale, to have them tell us how we're doing. They're going to do that every single day if they've been mentored. They're just going to click on it again the same way they would with Amazon or the same way they would with Google. So that data, that big data, is going to be available to us exactly when we need it. And it's really important that, you know, I'm not talking about blowing smoke and this is not, you know, smoke and mirrors kinds of stuff here. We definitely have to have the content. People have to be learning from this, and it's not just about how they feel. Are they learning? Are they applying that on the job? Is their performance improving? And if it's all the above, well, then it's working. But if they're happy with what they get, but the performance is not improving, that's not cutting it. And we have to have enough data that tells us that. Across the government, you know, think about the emphasis that's being placed, for example, now on employee engagement as opposed to employee satisfaction. Employee satisfaction is, are they happy? Employee engagement is, are they giving it 110% to do all they can for the workplace, for their employer, for the folks with whom they work that are serving right there in the foxhole with them? They're two very different things.
What does the landscape in your mind look like in the learning environment in the federal government 2 years and 5 years from now? Not just technologically, because that's hard to predict, but what is your sense of where we're going from the perspective of the people who want to acquire skills and want to move up in their jobs, and from the people who are already leaders who are expecting another generation or a half generation of people to move up those ranks and be ready to do the jobs that are required in the late 20-teens?
Sure. Yeah, we're still going to run the gamut. We're not going to stop delivering live classes in a traditional classroom. There's a place for that, and there are some people who learn better in that format. But there's no doubt that we're moving more toward blended learning. We're moving toward asynchronous learning. We're moving to virtual classrooms. And we're also redefining what training is, because an awful lot of the best training, which is associated with learning and performance, is being done right there in the workplace. And so we have to stop defining what we're doing by where we do it. It's not a question of it isn't training if you're outside the classroom. It's got to be training and learning and performance in the workplace.
Mike, great conversation and great insight into what you're doing at the General Services Administration. I appreciate your time.
It's a pleasure joining you, Francis. And like I said, we all the folks I work with, this is what we do. And, boy, we're working hard at it. And the same is true of every other agency out there. It isn't easy. It's tough. But it's also lots of opportunities. And it's an exciting time to be in learning and development.